And now, our feature presentation.
I like it spooky.
Hey everybody, welcome to I Like It Spooky Horror Podcast. I'm Brian. Clint, you there?
Oh, sorry, I was listening to this great intro theme music for the Green Slime.
Open the door, you'll find the secret. To find the answer is to keep it. You'll believe it when you find something screaming across your mind. Green Slime!
But before we get to the Green Slime, let's get to some news.
So again, like last episode, I have a ton of news. And I was thinking last night, I kind of want to theme this episode. And maybe that seems weird, but Green Slime was perfect horror sci-fi gateway. And we'll talk more about that. But all my news, except for one thing, is for the kids. Kind of like Green Slime should be for your kids. I mean, adults can enjoy it too.
It was rated G.
First thing I got from Netflix, after they raised their damn prices on us, or they're talking about it. They're bringing Ultraman Rising, set to take a baby kaiju bite out of this summer. So it's Ultraman. It's a Japanese show. And he's called back to Japan because there's all these monster attacks going on. And he gets a big dinosaur-shaped dragon thing that he has to babysit because the evil people are trying to make it take over the world, is the synopsis, pretty much. But it's for little kids. It's an animated show.
Do you think this is based off, was it Godzilla 1? Was it the last Godzilla flick that just came out?
Probably has something to do with like the success of that. There was an Ultraman show that just came out too. It's hard to get excited about though, because if it's a series, which I didn't go that far into it, I read it, it'll be canceled after the first fucking season.
Yeah, the way Netflix does it, yeah.
Even if it's good, they just cancel shit.
They have a new show out right now. Well, I don't know how new it is. I just stumbled across it. It's not a horror, but it's called Warrior, just after the Civil War. And it's about, you know, Chinese immigrants coming in and gangs and stuff. And I'm a couple episodes in and it's really good. And I just, same thing, I watch it. And I was like, oh man, I hope they don't cancel this. I'm just starting to like this, you know.
I binged watched True Detective the other day, the first season, because I had a couple people tell me I should watch it. So I was like, okay, it's been out for, you know, this is the fourth season. So if I get into the first season and it's bad or I really like it, then it's around for a couple seasons anyway. It's like American Horror Story. It's a different cast every year. I might watch the second season and be like, I didn't like this one, but then watch the third and the fourth and really like it.
But you always like part twos.
Well, and the fourth season is set in Alaska, and it's got a real thing feel to it. That'd be interesting. The second thing I stumbled across, and I'm not going to give you much info about it, other than the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem. Did you see that one? The new animated?
No.
I took Finley and we really enjoyed it. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles always kind of has that science fiction-y little bit of horror element because all of the monsters in it. They're making another one, October 2026. So maybe it'll be more horror related coming out in October. Then you'll enjoy this one. SpongeBob. You ever watch SpongeBob?
Ah.
The episode from February 20th of 2024, SpongeBob finds a Necronomicon and is making pancakes from one of the recipes in the book.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
Is this legitimate?
Yeah, there's a clip online. Bruce Campbell even said, I think it was on a X or whatever the hell it's called. Just don't say the words.
All I can hear is like, I don't know, Squidward, like, put that book down, SpongeBob, and like, you know, Patrick, like, oh, Klaatu, Nektu, Feratu.
Yeah, there's a clip. I've watched it. It's pretty funny.
You got to make that link so like share it or send it to me. I got to see that. I had heard, so Boots, her friend, told me that voice actor for SpongeBob died a couple of years ago, which she said, yeah, there's no more SpongeBob. And I was like, yeah, I haven't seen anything new in a while. And she's like, well, the voice actor passed away. And I was like, I think it's Patrick Kenny, I want to say is his name. I could be wrong. And I thought, I don't remember seeing anything about that. That would have been like all over the news.
I feel like the guy that does Patrick is the dude from God, what was that show? Coach. Did you ever watch that show, Coach?
What, Goober or Gobber or whatever? Yeah, he was in the original Stand, Stephen King TV miniseries. Yeah.
So I feel like that was him. Yeah, I'll have to see. I'll get this link and I'll send it to you. And my last news story, which it's for kids at my house, Joe Bob's coming back.
Hey, everybody, have you heard the news? Joe Bob is back in town.
They announced the next season of The Last Drive-In. They just had the Last of Us. Joe Bob hosted that. The new, isn't that what the new Walking Dead show is called?
Well, it's a zombie film. Oh, wait, yeah. Yeah, the ones who live. The Last of Us, I think, is that other zombie story, but...
Yeah, so he just hosted that, and it sounds like it did well. It was one of the first things for AMC and The Walking Dead that's had a huge viewership.
I figured.
So they were excited about that.
If you're talking The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live, I figured it would with Rick coming back. I want to watch it. I still haven't had time, but...
It should be streaming today. Joe Bob covered it Friday night for AMC and Shudder. But the Last Drive-In starts March 15th with a tribute to Roger Corman. So two Roger Corman films, one which was filmed in Las Vegas. So I was in attendance for that filming.
I wonder if we could see like the top of your head or the back of your head in one of the scenes or something.
Oh, probably. It was dark. It was, you know, late at night.
I'm going to watch it just so I can try to find you. Like, there you are right there. You're by the Port-a-John.
The first movie is A Bucket of Blood, but they also show Deathstalker, The Wild Angels, and The Trip. I would imagine Deathstalker will be the other movie.
I just saw news that somebody's going to remake Deathstalker.
Really?
I didn't read into it. I just saw the headline.
And then the regular season will start March 29th with episodes airing every other week on Friday nights, just one movie, until September. So 6 months of The Last Drive-In, which I'm excited for. So that's all I got for news. That's plenty. And I got to get you that link so you can watch it.
I don't even, we could just close the show with SpongeBob. That's the best thing ever. SpongeBob meets Evil Dead. It's perfect.
Well, did you ever see the one where he met Nosferatu?
Yeah, that's the hash-slinging slasher. Nosferatu. We quote SpongeBob a lot, especially that episode in this household.
No, I want to watch SpongeBob. Okay, well, I'm sending this. What's your news? Anything?
Well, mine kind of sticks in the vein of yours because it is for the kiddies. Hello, kiddies. And it is news about Tales from the Crypt. So this was about a week or so ago, I think I came across this. This came from iHorror.com. Tales from the Crypt publisher EC Comics is being brought back to life at Ani Comics. The article goes on to just kind of give a history of Tales from the Crypt and, you know, the Vault of Horror and Weird Science. And come to find out, I didn't realize this, but it was shut down after reaching Congress because there was an issue that was large enough to take down the publisher, because back in 1956, people thought that the comics were affecting the minds of our adolescents. My, how times have changed. But it looks like they're going to issue two new comics under the EC flag. And the first one is going to come out in July, and the second one's going to come out in August. And what I think is really exciting about this is I remember, you know, back when we covered Tales from the Crypt, you know, we each covered our own episode from the HBO series. That was, what, about 2 years ago, and I had met John Kassir at Scarefest in Kentucky. And, you know, I'm like, so what's going on? There's, you know, you're active. What's going on? And he said he's ready to go, but there's rights issues and everything's tied up. I think this is probably going to kick the door down for potentially new Tales from the Crypt as we know it growing up with the HBO series and the John Kassir voice in that character. Hopefully coming back to the small screen, the big screen. Regardless, though, EC Comics coming back through Ani Comics to the comic shelves is amazing.
Yeah, I feel like this is long overdue and that there's just so much money to be made on it. Like, what are we doing?
And right now, I shouldn't even say this because I'm probably misspeaking, but I vaguely remember hearing that a lot of the rights issues for Tales from the Crypt specifically was like, this person owned this and someone else owned the rights, this part of the rights, and it was just all chopped up. I remember covering some of it in Spill the Guts a while ago, months ago. And I remember saying or thinking just what you said, Brian, there's so much money to be made and us as fans are starving for this stuff. So just make it happen. And I really think this is the pathway for more Tales from the Crypt. We need more horror anthology for sure.
Well, it's kind of like the whole Friday 13th thing. We're dying for it. I mean, people are making money on it because they're doing fan films. I don't know that they're making money on it, but they're at least probably getting their projects financed enough to make something else.
That was something else in the news, and I don't have the article in front of me, so I'm just kind of going by memory, but something about Blumhouse wants to remake Friday the 13th. So kind of like when that lawsuit between Victor Miller and Sean Cunningham finally ended, it did kind of like open up this pathway now. And so you have the Peacock TV series we've been talking about forever, but that I think is filming this summer. It's coming out soon. Now Blumhouse wants to get a hold of it. And so same thing, you know, hopefully this EC Comics brings back Tales from the Crypt and everybody can make some money because money's good. That's what I've heard. I don't really know because I don't have any.
None?
I got my taxes back, so I got a little, but I'm investing and buying, so I don't really have... No, I don't. I'm poor.
So I don't not have money because I didn't really get anything. It took me till last night to figure out that I had something. And the one thing I bought, I actually used for the podcast. It's this little round spinny thing you put your stuff on. Did you see the video I did with like the heart from Valentine Bluffs where it went around?
I did.
It was on Amazon for $10. So I was like, for $10, I think it might even been $8. And it just plugs into the side of the computer. You can put batteries on it and you can put stuff on it and it can spin around and you can show people.
I like spinning stuff. So for inkmirrors.com, you know, because you've worked the table with me and for me many times, I have the mannequin arms displaying the t-shirts and then I've got the spinny motors so the t-shirts can oscillate. And just that simple movement, it draws people in. And so many people are like, oh my God, that's so cool. And I'm like, just $10 on Amazon, it's a disco ball spinner. I got that idea from Terrorific, who is a Michigan vendor who goes out to all the horror shows.
Yeah, and they'll come and they'll grab it, the t-shirt, and they'll like stop it and look at the back and look at the front. And I'm like, if you would have just waited 10 seconds, it would have spun around. And then they are like, oh, it's moving. Yes, it's moving.
people hold it and they're like, I call them, I usually, the two shirts that hang out there that oscillate, I call them the slasher shirts because I watch them, people talk to us and the shirt just hit them in the face and hit them in the face. It's like my slasher shirts are attacking you. Yeah.
So I got some movies from Vinegar Syndrome. I had to think for a minute. The Playgirls and the Vampire.
That looks older, like 50s, 60s.
It's in black and white.
I guess it has to be older because Playboy magazine folded a long time ago.
1960. Spanish Bloodbath. Three movies.
Kind of looks like the same era. Oh, is that Italian? You got the black glove and the scissors and the...
No, Spanish.
Oh, you just said Spanish. Yep, duh. Never mind. Explain to me.
Night of the Skull from 74. Violent Bloodbath from 74. The Fish with the Eyes of Gold from 74. So all from 1974. And this is the weirdest one, I guess, maybe. Because it's got a bunch of ants on the box.
So they're forming a skull.
Phase 4. After Phase 4, man will be no more. And it's got like the hard, you know, the hard cover. And a booklet.
That reminds me, hearing news recently that they were going to remake Them. You know, the movie from, I think it's like 56, about the radioactive mutated ants. Oh, I've seen that before. Okay. I haven't seen that movie, but I know Spider. The ant coming out of the palm of the hand. I remember seeing that in video stores before.
1973, and it's on 4K. I've never seen any of them. That artwork on the front of the slipcover is awesome. But that's all I got, really. I mean, I looked. I was like, man, I haven't really bought anything lately. It was a short month, so I didn't have time to buy anything. I have a bunch of stuff coming, it sounds like. I just bought some records from Waxwork because they had a sale on Godzilla records and like a Kaiju records. So they were half price, so I bought a couple records. Our buddy Jason Whitmarsh, you know Jason Whitmarsh from
Death Stitch,
sent me a message last night and he's like, you know, I just scored a Joe Bob shirt and you're the first person I thought of when I was thinking of upcycling it. And I was like, consider it sold. And he's like, well, I haven't even sent you pictures yet. I was like, sold. I don't care. I was like, when can I pick it up? I have cash. He's like, hold on a second. I got to find a shirt to put it on. I was like, okay, let me know. I'll be up there that day.
You're outside his house in like 2 hours knocking on the door. Is that shirt done yet?
Other than that, I didn't buy anything. Kind of sad now. Not that I don't have enough movies to watch.
Wow, you do seem sad. You need a hug. Anybody in the Galesburg area, stop by, pay Brian a visit, give him a hug. Just walk up and give him a hug. Tell him Clint sent you.
Sorry you didn't get more movies.
Sorry you don't have more disposable income.
I feel like an asshole because every day at work, not every day, but, you know, a couple times a week, the girls at work, I work in the doctor's office. So I work with almost all females. There's maybe three men that work in the whole office. And they'll be like, oh, I can't get my nails done. Oh, my makeup. Blah. And I'm like, we have one girl that's got SVT, so her heart rate goes really high, and she's always like, oh, I'm so mad I can't have coffee. And I'm always like, listen, there are people in this world that don't have clean drinking water, and you're bitching about can't have coffee. I'm bitching about not having enough stuff that I spent my money on.
I was gonna say, and then you turn around and walk away and mumble, my fucking vinegar syndrome subscription hasn't shown up yet, damn it. Where's my shirt from Death Stitch?
There's people in this world that can't afford Netflix. Not that you, I guess if you had money to buy a streaming service, it might not be the top one you'd pay for, but.
Well, they keep raising their rates. No one's going to be able to afford Netflix.
Then I won't be able to watch Ultraman.
Well, luckily I can still afford Netflix, but I did spend some money this time. Again, nothing with the collectibles. You know, I'm still working on getting that sold. We're not going to get into that again. I've been spending my money pretty much on everything I'm doing out there to, Stagecoach and the Nugget. And so a couple fun things that I got. And then this thing, I'm going to talk about something else that leads into a story, but it's a great story. I picked up this book from, and I found it on Facebook. And it's from Any Means Necessary, which you can type up Any Means Necessary on Facebook. And this guy named Sean Koss or Koss, C-O-S-S, I believe. He put out this book. It's this beautiful hardcover book. It's called It's All in Your Head. Multiple pages. And what it is his artist rendition of different mental illness disorders. And then so he kind of draws out what he thinks it would look like if it was kind of like the scary stories to tell in the dark, black and white, kind of etchy type, sketchy type monsters. And then what he does is he gives a description of the disorder and a little description of why he chose to draw it the way he did. It's really, it's hard to say because you're talking about mental illness disorders, but it's a fun way to have a conversation about mental illness. So it's loaded with great artwork. There's lots of information in there. And I picked it up because I thought it'd be a really cool. So at the Nugget, if no one's heard this before, but I'm turning that into what I call psychotherapy, which is an old asylum themed entertainment complex. And we're going to have axe throwing and splatter paint room and a rage room and stuff like that. But I thought it'd be something fun, like a coffee table book for people sitting there waiting to do anything or sitting at the bar or having some food while they're there to just flip through and be like, oh, this and that. And I have a friend, you know, just a great fun conversation piece that fits the theme of what I'm doing. In addition, I haven't bought this yet, but then I was thinking, I was like, you know, it's going to be great. I'm going to pick up a book of ink blots because I thought that'd be another fun coffee table thing. Somebody sitting there waiting, they could just ink blot each other for a good time. So spent some money on that. Another component that I picked up, and this was off Etsy, come to find out it's from Toronto, and it is this really cool resin steampunk chess set. Because at the complex, again, we're going to have axe throwing, we're going to have all this crazy, an escape room, but we're also sprinkling in what I call culture, quote unquote culture, but it's all going to be fit to theme. So we're going to have this really badass chess set sitting on these two marble pillars. So you can sit there and play a game of chess if you want, you know, or we're also going to have a display case full of historical asylum stuff like straight jackets. And all for Christmas, I got this really cool big ass old ass glass syringe, this homemade or not homemade, but a small like tabletop box, like you crank it and it's for shock therapy, you know, just stuff like that. So I spent my money on that, but this is the story. This is a really cool story. I actually stopped the other day at my local flower shop here in Brooklyn, Michigan. It's called Angel's Floral Creations. Walk in to buy some flowers, and I'm talking with Angel, the owner, and she has this, she just got a new card machine. And we're sitting there talking about it. She goes, I love this new machine. And I said, yeah. I said, you know, I go to conventions and I still use the old plug in the phone square reader. And I've been thinking about getting a mobile version of what she had. And she's like, oh, conventions. What do you do? And I saw I make t-shirts and, you know, horror collectible toys, knockoff novelty stuff. And I go to horror conventions and her eyes light up. And she was like, oh, my God, that's so cool. Horror conventions. She's like, I host the Witches Night Out here in Brooklyn. And I was like, oh, okay, I've heard of that. So we're talking about that. And then I said, can I come to that? Because I just assumed it would be, you know, a thing for women. And she was like, oh, no, you can come. I was like, okay, cool. I'll show up as a warlock. So then we're talking about all that stuff. And I said, well, oh, she starts telling me that her building's legitimately haunted. Oh, and she says that during the witches thing, she opens up a haunted house, a walkthrough thing. And I said, for Halloween? And she goes, no, just for the witches' night out, which I think is in like August or September. So when she starts telling me that the building's haunted, I start telling her that, you know, I'm now part owner of the Golden Nugget and invested out there to Stagecoach, about how that place is haunted. And I've got a whole nother ghost story that I'll tell another time, because that place is supposedly haunted. I have encountered a couple things. I've been there long enough where the ghosts know my name and I've heard it. It's kind of creepy. We're talking about ghosts and she says, oh, I went out there all the time as a kid and I've been out there, but there's certain rooms that she won't go into because she said they're very heavy for her. And then she leans in and she says, you know, that place used to be a brothel, right? And I was like, what? The Golden Nugget has always been a restaurant. I went there when I was a kid with my grandpa, great prime rib. Everybody in the area was like, oh, I remember the Golden Nugget. I remember the Golden Nugget. And over the years, it's kind of changed ownership and changed hands. And it's been, they've had comedians there and musical acts and different stuff. But anyway, so she goes, you know, that used to be a brothel, right? And I was like, what do you, no, it hasn't. So according to her, the story is, and I need to research this, the original owner would go to the waitresses and say, hey, do you want to make, and mind you, this is all a story. I have no idea if this is true or not, but would go to the waitresses and say, do you want to make a little extra money? And basically kind of had a clientele who would, you know, he would pimp the waitresses out basically. And when she said that, I went, oh my God, that makes so much sense, because there's this room in the basement where there's like this hallway that goes into like the utility side of the basement. And there's four rooms off of that. And they're just used for storage or whatever, but each of them have their own door. And they're all walled in. And the one has a shower stall. And I just, the second I've been in there, I was like, this is really a bizarre setup. I don't understand why this is like this. Whatever. It's going to work for my purposes so I can use it. So yeah, when she told me that, I was like, now I get it. The brothel rooms were in the basement with the shower stall.
Yeah, because why would you need a shower in the basement of a restaurant?
Well, see, and then I've heard stories that over the recent years, people had been living in there. I heard a story about how the room with the shower stall, there was a guy who actually lived in there for a while and died in that room. There's just so many stories. This place is such a mythical urban legend. And I'm finding more and more when I talk to people, everybody has, I was talking to a semi driver at UPS the other day, and him and I talk every once in a while, but not a whole lot. And we just started chatting. I brought up that place and he was like, oh, I used to bust tables out there. Oh man, we used to do some crazy shit out there and blah, blah, blah. Everybody's got a crazy story about this place.
You'll have to, once you get maybe settled, you know, and things kind of calm down, start, if you have a story, let me know, like write it out and we could put something together where maybe when people are waiting, they can read stories of the Nugget.
That's a good idea. History of the building's past, or yeah.
What stories have you heard? It'd be interesting to hear what people have, you know, what they've heard, even if it's not true.
I know the general consensus is haunted. It always comes back to haunted. So I know this is kind of strained from Why Are We Poor, but I talked about some money I spent, which led me to that great conversation. But do you want to hear my ghost story?
Oh yeah, let's hear it.
So there's been a few things, but this is probably the most prominent one. So I'm a believer, but I'm also a skeptic. Okay. Whenever something happens or I hear something, I'm the Scooby-Doo crew who's like, okay, was the wind blowing? Is there a short in the light? You know what I mean? Like, I'm a believer, but let's look at this rationally. I am out to that building all the time, day, night, by myself. I've been there 3 a.m. by myself, 2 p.m. by myself, any which way from Sunday. I don't feel heavy. I'm not scared. I don't feel any sort of presence, but everybody and their mom who's ever out there is, oh, this and the door slammed and the this and the that. So a lot of the crew out there, there's one room where the light bulbs like to flicker sometimes. It's just old fixtures, you know what I mean? That's how I view it. And so we're in that room. It was myself, my right-hand man, Bobby, his old lady, and then the caretaker who lives across the street. And we're all there hanging out in the basement. And there's like this other little room off the basement. And I'm in that other little room, sealing the concrete walls up with dry lock. And I'm just, you know, putting sealer up. And I hear them in the other room talking, and I couldn't hear what they were saying, but it sounded like they were asking ghosts questions. And so I hollered over. I said, are you guys talking to the fucking light bulbs again? And I walk in the room. And when I walk in the room, my buddy's old lady is holding her phone. And I walk in the room, and out of her phone comes Clint. And I go, what the fuck's happening? Well, apparently what happened was is she has this app, which is an EMP app on her phone, and they were walking around asking the ghosts questions. They were conducting their own kind of impromptu little ghost hunt. And I walk in the room, her phone goes, Clint. And that's the tone it said. And when I said, what the fuck's happening? She goes, that's the second time they said your name. And I'm like, what? So they're explaining to me what they're doing. And she goes, yeah, I got this app. And she said, I asked, do you know who's here? And the voice came over the phone and said, Clint. And then right after that, I walked in the room and it went, Clint. And that's what got me creepy. I'm getting goosebumps right now because it was in that right tone. It was like, you know, oh yeah, Brian's here. And you walk in the room and I'm like, oh, Brian, you know, there you are. It was just like, holy shit. And then she asks, do you know where you are? And I heard the word nugget. And then she said, how many of you are there? And they said six. And then after that, we just kind of started talking amongst ourselves. That's probably my most prominent ghost story as of yet, because it's weird when you walk into a room and all of a sudden you're Norm from Cheers.
Sometimes you wanna go where everybody knows your name.
From the other side, there's things you can't see calling out your name, you know? That's pretty creepy.
Well, you're the person that's been there the most probably in the last forever, right? I mean, it's been a while since people have been in there.
Yeah, we've got a small dedicated crew who are in there and out of there. And this isn't a competition, but I'm probably there the most. I'm in and out. And there's a lot of times I'm there, like I say, by myself at the wee hours of the morning. And I've been spending a lot of time there. I like to say that I'm making peace with the building. I'm there taking care of her. We're getting her back going. I'm kind of a hippie when it comes to that stuff. So I have conversations with her. We sit there and just listen to each other and get to know each other. You know, I know it sounds weird, but so yeah, I kind of feel like I'm the force out there. I don't know. I guess maybe that's the way to say it. I don't think anybody's mad at me out there. So that's a good thing.
Well, it's good. Yeah. When you were talking about the witches night, I was thinking back to work. All the girls at work went on the full moon, like 2 weeks ago, and got ear piercings and nose piercings and all that. And I was like, you guys are witches now. And they're like, what? I was like, you got a fucking piercing on a full moon. You're either witches or werewolves.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now you're a coven. So like I work with a coven of witches.
Well, you better stay on their good side and start buying them some Vinegar Syndrome or some Terrorvision movies.
Buy them something. Shit. There goes all my money.
They sacrifice blood and flesh in the full moon in a group. Oh man.
I got a lot of flesh. I'm fat, you know?
Well, I think I know a way besides getting a sponsor where maybe we can make some money and maybe we'll just host some ghost tours out there to the Nugget. We'll make some money off that. But until we can arrange that, what do you say we take it to a sponsor?
I thought you were going to ask me to work at the brothel.
That's not a bad idea. I might be able to pimp you out and make some money. You said you got a lot of flesh to go around. Sacrifice your flesh.
2-for-1 special. There's only one of him, but there's enough for two people.
Comes with a side order of fries.
It's showtime!
The I Like a Spooky Horror podcast doesn't just talk about horror. We screen it for you also. After the success of the double feature showing at the Galesburg Orpheum last October, we are at it again, this time in cooperation with Terrorvision, bringing you two films on the big screen of the Capitol Theater located at 211 North 3rd Street in Burlington, Iowa, Saturday, April 6th. Doors open at 6 and the movies roll at 7, including Blood Car and Slashers. Tickets are just $8 at the door, which is a small price to pay for a chance to hang with spooky co-host Brian and help him celebrate his birthday. For more info, visit BurlingtonCapitolTheater.com, and we will see you at the movies.
So now that we've heard from our sponsor, it's time for the movie. The science fiction masterclass in gateway horror. That's what I'm calling this movie. This is perfect. Sit the kids down, get them into science fiction, get them into horror movies, and then just let them explore. From 1968, Clint's favorite song, The Green Slime.
Open the door, you'll find the secret. To find the answer is to keep it. You'll believe it when you find something screaming across your mind.
So you talk about kids and gateway horror. This, I've talked about my theory about you always go back to your 10-year-old self. This was one of the first movies that I remember seeing at my grandparents when I spent the weekend there on like the Saturday afternoon double feature shocker on WGN from Chicago. And I'm not a big sci-fi fan. But sci-fi horror is usually fun. This movie is a little heavy on the sci-fi as opposed to the horror, but there's just enough of the horror to keep, you know, interest for the spooky fans. It's rated G, like you're talking about, for the kids. But what's cool about it is it kind of explores some scary themes, and there's also enough gore, especially for the time and especially for the fact where it's rated G, to where it's a pretty solid horror flick. And it's, of course, got, I dare say, the best theme song. It rivals the My Bloody Valentine, Harry, you know, Ballad of Harry Warden. They're two completely different songs, but it's a perfect song for the movie.
We'll give you a little synopsis for this one. After destroying a huge asteroid that was on a rapid collision course with Earth, a group of astronauts discover they have accidentally returned to their space station with an alien green slime creature that feeds on, it says radiation, but I feel like it was energy.
It was energy, any kind of energy.
And can reproduce rapidly from its own blood.
What's great about the movie, too, is it begins with like that a textbook definition of a hook that I dare say is almost kind of Dawn of the Dead style opening. It immediately spells out the general premise and the characters. It lays down like a solid foundation of interest, and not to mention a theme song that rivals the greatness of the Ballad of Harry Warden from My Bloody Valentine. I'm going to talk about the song. You're going to hear me say something about the theme song probably 52 more times.
Yeah, it starts out super quick. It throws you right into the movie. It gets you hooked. It goes right to the spaceships with the little models, which I love. I loved all the model work was amazing on this, all the miniatures.
So that was ahead of my notes, but I wrote down the absolute thorough, great use of detailed sets throughout the film. But I do have to wonder if the very first scene we see with the models, where it's like the exterior of headquarters and the cars are moving back and forth, like, wouldn't it have been cheaper just to kind of shoot outside of an office building? And I'm not knocking, because the models and the sets are fabulous, but that one in particular, I'm like, couldn't you have just gone outside the studio's building and taken a shot?
That would be my absolute only knock on this movie is it starts out fast, it ends fast, the middle is kind of slow. This is an American and Japanese production. They work together, but it's also got like some Italian in there. Did you read about that?
I did, and that's the one. I was going to talk about that later. The fun fact that I learned, I got it pulled up here unless you have something written down. I never knew this. The original storyline for Green Slime originated in Italy, where MGM also had dealings. Years before the Green Slime went into production, MGM had contracted Italian filmmaker Antonio Margetti, sorry if I'm saying your name wrong, to direct what was originally intended to be a series of four television movies about the adventures of a space station called Gamma One. Cruise to the rest of the paragraph, it says that the Green Slime was made as an unofficial fifth entry in the series, and the only connection to Antonio's film is the space station, which is retitled Gamma 3.
Yeah, so it starts out, there's an asteroid coming towards Earth, and there's only one man that can do the mission.
And it's not Bruce Willis, because this is kind of a similar storyline to Armageddon.
He's retiring, he's already put in his paperwork, but he's the only guy that can do it. And his ex-partner is the commander of the space station that he has to work from. And they had a falling out. I don't remember why or what happened. You hear a story of he had made a mistake and it cost a lot of people their lives. So they kind of had a falling out. That's it. It takes off from there. He goes, I mean, you're only in that first base station or that first area for the first 10 minutes of the movie. And then he's off to space to gather his crew. And yeah, it's pretty much Armageddon. Before Armageddon.
The only part you talk about, you know, if you had to say something bad, one of the bad things I'm going to say, but you have to just suspend disbelief or whatever for the sake of the movie, but it's space travel. It takes a long time to get from point A to point B. And it's just, he shows up, they get in the rocket, they leave, he's there. The commander on the ground's like, oh, what's taking him so long? Because he wants him to blow up the asteroid before it hits Earth. And the one guy's like, they've only been there 5 minutes, you know, and it's just, it kind of all happens within a matter of like an hour, you know, in movie time.
They get to the space station, they gather their crew, they have kind of a, oh, I'm going too. And he's like, no, you're not going. And then he ends up taking, what was there, six astronauts, six or eight?
Something like that. They took the doctor. The character's name was Dr. Halvorsen or Halvorsen. He's actually kind of the one who... Well, actually, no, he didn't. He discovered the green slime. He was trying to bring it back after they set the the bombs in the asteroid so it could blow up before it hit Earth. He was going to bring some of the green slime back, but the main hero captain guy, who was the very straight-laced to the letter of the law, said no way. But some of the green slime got onto another astronaut's suit on their journey back to the space station.
Commander Rankin, he's like, throw that away. He's like, it's a major discovery. He's like, I don't care. We got to go. They narrowly escape the explosion of the asteroid because they have to push the time closer.
I swear the guy who played him must have been Bruce Campbell's illegitimate father because he's got that big chiseled 50s jawline. Like, he is the stereotypical white hero from that era. Just the hair and the big chiseled jawline and the very serious attitude. And
so he gets injured on the way back to the space station. His arm, that's when you find out that it was his ex-girlfriend, who is now the fiance, you find out later, of his co-pilot, his ex-co-pilot. They had a thing. So that now there's that in the story. And that's what kind of muddled it up in the middle for me. I didn't need all that. And the Japanese version is 77 minutes long. And if I remember right, that takes the love story and that out of it. It may have been better.
I haven't seen it. That's what I read. And I read that it was more, the term was militaristic. And yeah, it took out that love triangle dynamic. I kind of enjoyed it just because it added a layer of humanity and something maybe relatable. And I didn't think it was oversaturated with the love story part. It was just enough there to where the dynamic between mainly our two male heroes, you know, it all kind of made sense. But even without that, I mean, it was a great story layered with danger and personal tension, the love interest, you know, and of course, human extinction and monsters. Because we do get to some monsters after a while.
It takes a little while to get to the monsters. Not too long, though, but I got a very The Thing feel, too, from it. Did you get that kind of feeling?
I did.
We're on this spaceship, and there's these creatures that are, they decontaminate the suits, and then all the creatures pop up.
I think The Thing vibe was, once they blew up the asteroid, they're on the space station, they're celebrating, they saved Earth, but a little bit of that slime made it on, and it found its way to a power source. And then there's this great lead up to something starts killing people individually as they're off on their own. And that did remind me of The Thing, is no one knows what's going on. Everybody's just going about their daily lives slowly but surely. And that's where I agree, in the middle, it got kind of muddled. And I don't think it necessarily did. It just seemed like it, because the beginning was bang, bang, bang. And the end was bang, bang, bang. There was nothing wrong with the middle. Just the beginning and end were so fast that the middle felt muddled. But I thought it was a great pacing to set up the tension for this mystery unfolding of why are these people dying? What's going on? And then how they discover what's the green slime and the monsters that come from it.
It's only 90 minutes long. So if the first half hour is super fast, which it was, and the last half hour is just straight action, what are you going to put in the middle? You can't keep it going for the whole 90 minutes. I mean, you got to build some story. So seems slow because they're building story.
I also think that one of the reasons it seems a little slow in times, because I actually originally wrote down, I've seen this movie countless times, and I wrote down, but I took it out. I rewatched this again, and I was like, yeah, there's a lot of dialogue, but all the dialogue makes sense. None of it's really useless. But then I was watching it last night, and I was like, there's actually not a lot of dialogue. It's not overdone. But me not being the biggest sci-fi fan, for me, what slows it down is all the conversation, which, again, isn't much, but it seemed like it because I don't enjoy it, of, you know, gamma ray 6, hit the hyperdrive button, just all the space talk. And I'm just like,
and they're the little models going across the screen.
And they're beautifully done. Like, you know, they're models, but everything is so exquisitely done and so fucking detailed. When they were on the asteroid and, you know, the ship lands on the asteroid and then their little Range Rover comes out, you know, the Mars Rover, and there's two astronauts on it. They had a little model astronauts on there. You could tell that, but it would look so good.
It makes you want to build models and like shoot them up into the air. I bet it was a blast doing the model work, and working on this film would have been so much fun.
I would dare say, this is kind of a bold statement, I would dare say the model work on this movie rivals some stuff in like the original Star Wars and stuff on Lucasfilm. Maybe that had a little bit more of a budget and a higher production quality as far as, like, you know, the film stock use and the camera technicians or whatever. But I'd say the model work at its core rivals Star Wars.
Some of the Godzilla model work, maybe it's the suit that looks kind of wonky, you know, from the Godzilla films, because it's a big man in a suit. But it reminds me of that too, you know, the little tanks and all the little stuff in the Godzilla movies. I had told a friend of the show's, Brian Clark, that we were covering this.
Oh, he probably got excited.
Yeah, I was like, "Do you love like this movie?" And he's like, "I love that movie." He said, "You picked it." And I was like, "No, actually Clint picked this." And he's like, "Really? How does Clint like green slime but not Godzilla?" I said, "I don't know that he doesn't like Godzilla. He just has not went into Godzilla enough."
There's a reason. You want me to skip ahead of my notes and tell you?
Tell me why you don't like Godzilla.
So it's not that I don't like Godzilla, but I'm not the biggest fan. And to answer Brian Clark's question, why I like green slime, but I'm not a big Godzilla fan, is because, yeah, they're both space alien. They're both, you know, Japanese kind of inspired in their aesthetic. I'm a story guy, and I don't care. You can change my mind. Fight me. This movie is essentially a zombie movie in space because it has the unstoppable creatures that are quickly growing in numbers and threatening to overtake mankind. Green Slime is very Night of the Living Dead. You have your two heroes battling over control, kind of like Ben and Harry Cooper did in Night of the Living Dead, you know, fighting over they're going to be upstairs or downstairs. It has those elements. To me, Godzilla is cryptid creature. This one thing might destroy the city and we need to nuke it. The Green Slime thing is really creepy because it explores, like, if this hits Earth, we're all going to be, you know, taken over by these unstoppable monsters. To a degree, I feel that green slime is a little more rooted in realism because it makes sense to me that there is some, you know, protoplasmic whatever in space that can show up and kill us, you know. It's like we all, humankind fears plagues and stuff like that. And that's basically what the green slime is. So it's a fun, quirky, model-filled movie and presents these kind of serious issues in a kind of a fun way. But so that's why I love green slime. Basically the story.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about Godzilla. You don't go to bed at night thinking, oh, what if Godzilla comes tomorrow?
Exactly. But green slime is no different than coronavirus. Green slime is no different than that movie Black Mold or the movie Spore that I talked to you about a while ago that Brian Hillard worked on that was shot here in Michigan. It's, you know, it's no different than The Walking Dead. It's a virus that can take over and just wipe you out.
I mean, I love Godzilla, but there are a handful of Godzilla movies that the story's not great. It's about Godzilla, you know, it's about him destroying Tokyo. And we had actually talked about covering a Godzilla film at some point. So I was going through my mind, which Godzilla film would that be? And that, you know, I have some of my favorites, but I was like, I want to pick one that's got a good story. So I kind of have a little list built of like two or three that I'm like, oh, that's got a good story. And that's got a good story.
I'm down to discuss a Godzilla. I'm not like, oh, I hate this. And I'm never going to talk. If you say we're going to do it, I'm not going to be on the show. No, I'm down to talk about it.
And I would not pick Godzilla Minus One because it's a great story, but it's super heavy. It's not so much a Godzilla film as it is a post-war film. It just happens to have Godzilla in it.
I think another reason that I'm a fan of green slime as opposed to Godzilla, and I can't explain this, I can only define it. I am always naturally drawn to the underdog. I'm always naturally drawn to me, Godzilla's mainstream because everybody, and you can talk to anybody, even if they're not a fan, and they know who Godzilla is, but how many people have seen green slime? It's like pro wrestling. You had WCW, WWF at the time, and ECW. I was just drawn to ECW because they were the obscure ones. And a lot of times where you see the more action and get the better story.
And this is a first time watch for me. I'd never seen green slime.
And now the song is stuck in your head forever. Not only is the theme song great, but the movie's got a great score. It's really good at setting the tension. It's not too sci-fi-y. If that's is that a term? Sci-fi-y?
I don't know. Sci-fi-y. That's probably going to be like sci-fi's new streaming service.
Sci-fi-y. Where you can listen to sci-fi music all day long. It's fun to say sci-fi-y.
Sci-fi-y. Entertainment for everyone.
You know, something else I enjoyed about this movie too is it has a real clean, almost realistic kind of, but yet comic book or graphic novel like visual aesthetic, which is a great contrast that allows the green slime, especially when it's the slime before they mutate or whatever into the monsters, to really look like disgusting and sinister.
Did that sound like live in your mind for the last week? Or I don't know when you watch this or if you watch the sound of the creatures. Yeah, I was like, oh my God, forever. I'm going to hear it forever.
I actually wrote down in the notes here, my cat was not a fan of that because my cat is sitting on the ottoman in front of me. I'm on the couch and the cat's facing me and I'm watching the movie. And when the first creature kind of forms itself and it makes that damn noise, the cat's eyes or ears perk up and it looks all just bothered and looks at me like, what the fuck is going on? I got a grumpy cat to begin with and it was not happy.
You imagine that you're working on the model for this movie, and they're like, we need some extras to play creatures, get in suits, and run around and wave the tentacles. Oh, yeah, me? Can I? That had to be a blast, too. Just the creatures, the chaos from them, once there gets to be what? There was probably 30 of them at one point, I felt like.
Just all running around and bumping into each other. Well, come to find out, they were all played by kids.
Oh, really? Huh.
Yeah, it was all children. And actually, I don't know why they said this. This is another one of those movies. If you go to the Internet Movie Database, there's, you know, 20 fun facts. I didn't even go through all of them, but it said that they were all played by Japanese kids. I don't know why they had to say Japanese, but they were. So the film was also shot in Tokyo, which explains it was entirely in Tokyo and explains why it has that. Oh, and it was all with a Japanese FX group, which explains that Godzilla cryptid feel that, you know, Brian Clark probably enjoys. Yeah, all of them were played by kids.
Well, that would have been a blast.
I wonder if they have like a, you know, over here we have like a little people. I don't know. Is there like an organization for actors? Well, there is, because a lot of them were upset about when they redid the Seven Dwarfs, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, and there was only one of them was a dwarf, and everybody, they were all mad. I wonder if over in Japan, if they have that, because it seems to me like that would be a perfect role, but they didn't. They threw kids in their suits.
Yeah, like when they remade Willy Wonka, and they used that one guy instead of, they just copied him over.
The English actor.
Well, no, the one with Johnny Depp. They used the one actor, and they just copied him, you know, so there was like 40 of him. They used his likeness.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and it was just him over and over again. Did you ever see that movie Dewey Cox, Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox Story?
No, again, I know what it is, but I've never watched it.
It's a satire of a Walk Hard or like, you know, music movies, biopic. And at one point he's going through like his Bob Dylan phase, and he has a song about little people. You know, it's like got like a Black Panther feel. The little people are like holding up signs. What was the song? Let me hold you, little man, so the dog will stop licking your face. Like, I love that movie. I need to watch it. What else you got for trivia?
Gosh, you made me like reveal my trivia stuff earlier on than I thought. Yeah, I'll tell you, one of my wishes for this movie is I enjoyed this movie. I enjoyed the pacing. I enjoyed the story. I enjoyed everything about this movie. I kind of wish the monsters were a little more realistic, because they were kind of goofy. But what are they supposed to be? Especially with it being rated G. But I wish that the ending was not so black and white. I think it would have been fun if some of the slime had made it to Earth instead of burning up in the atmosphere. And I'm also curious if this inspired Stephen King's The Lonesome Death of Geordie Verrill in the original Creepshow, which green slime in this movie, they turn into their own mutant monsters, and that he turned into a plant monster. But you know, the meteor falls and the green slime comes out and then it overtakes the world and turns it into plants.
Yeah, there could have been like a little bit of green slime on the bottom of somebody's shoe or like on the outside of the spaceship.
Well, see, here's what I was thinking was the last scene you see is they send the Gamma 3 space station crashing to Earth. They navigate it to where it goes to Earth, and it just burns up and blows up as it reaches the atmosphere. But those creatures thrived off energy. They could heal themselves off energy. They were born from energy, and it didn't matter what kind of energy it was. Fire is a transfer of energy. And there's a scene where they're all like, doing their noise, going all crazy on the ship as it's burning up. But I was like, are they dying? Or are they like, oh, more energy? They're like Decepticons, like feasting on Energon cubes. They're just like, yay. Did that make them stronger and bigger? Did they fall to Earth? I don't know. I just wish they would have implied that a little more. I think it would have been fun to think, happy ending. Nope, you just doomed humanity.
Yeah, you could have a little bit of the green slime. If the fire did kill them, which I gather it did, you could have it like by the rocket ship boosters as it comes towards Earth, you know, or as it docks into another station, wherever it goes.
I'm really surprised they didn't, because it would have been a great way for a sequel.
Well, it was the fifth movie, so maybe they're like, okay, we're done with this.
It was like the unofficial, and it was kind of like a segue from, I always kind of want to go back and watch the four previous Italian ones, although I think that's just going to be strictly sci-fi. That's more about the space station. That's probably where you get the backstory of our two leads, or three leads with the love triangle. But yeah, this was just seemed like one and done. I couldn't find any info about the budget, about how much it made. I know it's kind of a cult hit, but this is another one of those movies where I love this movie and I hate seeing remakes, but I think if this was remade, it could be a decent flick and maybe bring it to the masses. The Blob, okay, from 50 whatever, with Steve McQueen, is a great movie. And that's more popular than Green Slime. But when they remade The Blob in 88, 89, that was a great fucking movie. And they really punched up the gore and the horror. They could do that with Green Slime.
I almost feel like if it would have got a remake in the 80s or 70s, it would be better than the remake we would get now.
I agree.
They would go probably in a totally different direction and overdo everything or not do it well. You know, have we had a good remake in the last 10 years?
Nothing comes to mind. I know that we've had some, but every time people ask me this question, my mind immediately goes to, and I get some flack for this, but I enjoyed it. My mind immediately goes to the remake of Amityville with Ryan Reynolds. I don't know why, because there's been others, but my mind immediately goes to that because that was probably one of the first and only remakes that I thought was as good or if not better in certain aspects than the original.
Yeah, I know there's some people that love the Rob Zombie Halloween remakes. I was fine with it. It was whatever. I hear the second one's better than the first movie. I own it. I've never watched it. But yeah, I just feel like they would not do this movie justice.
Well, maybe with Godzilla coming back, and this does seem to be like the year of the cryptid. Remember, we were talking a couple episodes back, James Wan's doing a Cthulhu thing. You're talking about this Ultraman, you know, series earlier on Netflix. Of course, the Godzilla, A Quiet Place 2 or A Quiet Place Day 1's coming out. So maybe this is kind of a revival for that subgenre. Anybody listening who's got some money, hey, maybe we could do a fan film.
Green Slime. We could start it at Nickelodeon, like the old Nickelodeon studios.
You can't do that on television.
Some slime gets into the slime at Nickelodeon, starts killing kids.
I know that Green Slime's popular enough to where I have in my collection from Monstars. It's about the size of a pop figure. A Funko Pop. It's not a Funko Pop, but it is the monster from Green Slime. So it's popular enough to where they made the toy and people bought it. You don't have a Eaten Alive with Robert Englund doesn't have a toy. Worms doesn't have a toy, you know, but fucking Green Slime from 1969 has a toy.
Well, and when you had the Green Slime candles at the Ink Mayor's table, every person, not every person, but every couple people, somebody would be like, oh, I remember that movie. And they'd smell it. And they'd be like, I remember watching when I was younger. Or, you know, I've seen it. So people know it.
I remember when I made that candle, you know, and Melissa and I were still together. And she was like, her and my entire family hate because I will just Green Slime. I sing it all the fucking time. Like, would you shut up? It's like the dad joke. Like, oh, he's at it again, you know. And so when I said, oh, we're going to do a Green Slime candle. And she was just like, no one's going to fucking buy that. No one's going to know what it is. Whatever. But yeah, there was, I don't want to say a lot, but it was more than one or two people. They're like, oh, yeah. Then I remember I scented it lime. We had it scented lime. So yeah, it was great. I guess we should rate it. What do you think? What would you rate this movie?
You got any more trivia? I got a couple more trivia things.
Oh, you do? Shoot. Go bring it.
The pilot episode of Mystery Science Theater 3000 in 1988. What movie do you think they watched?
I'm going to say Green Slime.
They watched Green Slime. So if you're a Mystery Science Theater fan, you're welcome. Because Green Slime started all of that. They picked the movie and watched it.
Hey, so that's another great thing about this movie is this is like it's a multi-purpose movie because it's sci-fi, it's horror, it's kind of retro, you know, it's very dated. It's fun. It's sort of scary. It's gateway, but it also leads itself to comedy. I haven't seen what you're talking about, but this is a great, let's riff on this movie.
Yeah, and then the only other thing I found was there's a Green Slime Award given every year to the worst in science fiction.
No.
I don't know why to the worst.
You cannot tell me that Green Slime is not a great double bill with The Blob. Or
oh, that would be a blast.
Or the Incredible Melting Man. I would pay to go watch both those.
Or the original Thing, you know, the Thing from Another World.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. It's just a little more comic booky. It's a little more pop culture-ish than some others.
So I don't think that they're giving the award to like slam Green Slime. It's just a fun science fiction-y movie that it's not the worst ever.
No, and that's actually something I forgot to say. I didn't write down. I'm glad you brought that up. It sparked my brain here is watching this movie, everything from the dialogue to the camera angles to, of course, the models that we talked about. Everything was very well thought out, very well planned, very well executed. Nothing was half-assed. Nothing was goofy. It all made sense. The people who made this movie took it seriously and it shows, and they did a damn good job. They crafted a really, really well thought out movie.
And this is a movie you could put on any time of the day, no matter the setting, and watch it. Have it on in the background. Kids.
Yes.
Adults. At a family get together. It can be on.
It has happened many times in my house. Or it's that where if you want to curl up on a Saturday night and you're like, I don't have anywhere to go, I kind of want that old school Sven Gulli or Elvira feel tonight, then you put on Green Slime and goddamn it, you got it.
I don't know that he's ever covered this because it's not free streaming anywhere.
No, I had to pay $2 on Prime.
Yeah, which, I mean, that's fine. You get it for 48 hours. It's worth $2. Hell, it's worth $4, $6. We should probably, like you said, rate it. I'm going to go 8 out of 10 model spaceships. It was fun. I mean, it's something that I'd watch again. I'd put on in the background. Finley came in and out of the room a couple times and was watching the little monsters running around.
I'm right there with you. I'm glad that, unlike when we covered The Ward a few episodes back, I'm glad that I've redeemed myself and presented a movie to you that you enjoyed. I kind of figured you would, especially knowing you were a Godzilla fan. But I'm right there with you. I'm going 8 vagina-eyed monsters out of 10. Oh, yeah. The monster's eyes look like some gnarly gash, man. I'm telling you. Like you need to go to the doctor and have something done about that. I actually would give it a 7, but it's the theme song takes it up one full point. It is just a solid movie. And I think it actually does carry, I think it's influential in a way. It's a great, it's movies like this. And like you brought up The Thing, it made you think of The Thing. It's movies like this that inspired filmmakers like John Carpenter to go on and do the great things that he's done. Yeah, I almost want to go higher, but I know what it is. So I'm going 8. 8 vagina-eyed monsters out of 10.
Well, and what other movie can you have 3 cultures blended together? I mean, you get American, you get Japanese, you get Italian. I mean, just influences from all 3.
Well, hey, there's a fun fact. Random after-the-rate fun fact I'll throw you. I did read that a lot of the background actors were actually American military personnel just stationed over there at the time. They said, hey, you guys come over here and throw on the helmet and act official. Made it authentic.
I got it for another day. I'm going to go, no, maybe it expires today. I don't know. If it's still on there, I'll just throw it on this morning. We'll cook some breakfast and we'll watch the Green Slime.
Have green eggs and ham.
It was Dr. Seuss's birthday this month, March 2nd. Perfect. Maybe it inspired Dr. Seuss too.
I know I just used the word authentic. Do you know what else is authentic, Brian?
My haircut.
Your haircut is very authentic. And I met your barber at the Orpheum in Galesburg, and he is authentic as well and proud of your haircut.
Not much to be proud of, but sure.
What else is authentic is every goddamn show, and there's a lot of them, on our podcast network, the PFPN. So let's hear from them.
You're listening to the Prescribed Films Podcast Network, home to hundreds of hours of free podcast entertainment. The shows on this network all have a common goal, providing you with the best discussions about movies and other forms of entertainment media. The PFPN hopes to fill your earholes with audio joy. Visit our website with links to all the other amazing shows at www.thepfpn.com. Thanks for listening.
So now that we've heard from our podcast network, it's time for This Day in Horror. It's covering March 17th through the 30th. March is kind of slow. Getting ready for spring. I don't know what these people were doing. They weren't making movies.
A date which will live in infamy.
Got a couple birthdays this month. On March 17th in 1951, Kurt Russell. He ties right into the episode with The Thing. And then on the 18th, we had Brad Deerdorf. We all know him. You know, Chucky, and he's been in a ton of other stuff.
One of his greatest performances, one of the, not just his, greatest performances I've ever seen is The Exorcist 3. I don't know if he got an Oscar for that or an Academy Award. He should have got something if he didn't. Amazing. Amazing acting in that movie.
Do you feel like people love The Exorcist 3, but they don't talk enough about him in it?
I agree. You always hear about the nurse, but I feel if he wasn't in that movie, if it was someone else in that role, that movie would have not have been as substantial. I'm pretty passionate about that. He made that movie.
Well, and he's Chucky. So people are always like, well, he's Chucky. He's in something else. Yeah, he's in a lot of other stuff, but they always fall back to he is Chucky.
You know, another movie he's in that a lot of people love, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
I've seen it, lived it. Anyway.
He flew right out the damn cuckoo's nest.
March 19th, 2003, Dreamcatcher. And then 20, 2004. Jeez, I'm having flashbacks to my days at the institution. Dawn of the Dead. That was a decent remake. I enjoyed Dawn of the Dead, the remake.
I enjoyed it. I didn't hate it. I don't know what I was expecting when I watched it, and there was a couple things about it that I didn't dig, but I own it on DVD, and I've seen it more than once, and it's fun.
Is it Mekhi Phifer that's in that movie? He's going to be up your way here later this year.
Is he going to be at, I saw, is it Astronomicon or is it Nightmares?
Nightmares.
It is Nightmares? Okay.
He was the only guest I've seen them announce so far. But I mean, I don't feel like he does a lot of conventions. I've never seen him as a guest anywhere.
No, I haven't either.
And then March 20th in 1992, we get Basic Instinct. Not sure if that's horror enough, but Shen crosses her legs.
Didn't I just rate the movie 8 out of 10 vagina-eyed monsters?
And then in my notes were backwards. So in 1964, we get 2000 Maniacs, which got a remake with Robert Englund.
I enjoyed the original way more than, I don't know if that was a remake. That was kind of like a kind of sequel-ish, sort of. The original is superior.
And then in 2015, this was a fun one. Zombievers. Did you ever see this one?
No, but I know what it is.
March 22nd, my favorite Friday 13th movie, Friday 13th Part 5. A New Beginning in 1985.
Did you see where I tagged you and someone on Facebook was selling the poster? Okay.
Yeah, they had like 5 posters. I was like, where the hell did you get 5 sealed posters?
Who knows? I got a fun story for the Dawn of the Dead thing.
For the 2004 one?
So I don't know this. Some of this is just me guessing. But in 2003, I wrote my first feature-length screenplay. And it was a zombie film and it had nothing to do with Dawn of the Dead. I wrote it in 2002. In 2003, I went to Hollywood and tried to shop it around. Didn't sell it. Prior to that, I was a kid. I had no idea what I was doing. I have no representation. I had never written a feature-length screenplay. I had no idea how to get it sold. And at the time, Tom Savini was kind of a big influence to me, and I knew he ran his school that I almost went to, but I never did. So I was like, this is dumb. But I was like, you know what? I went ahead and mailed a copy to Tom at his school. Okay. Never heard anything back. Several months later, it got sent back to me, and it was from somewhere in Pennsylvania where there was a horror con. Hadn't even gone to horror cons back then. I was 20 years old. And all I could think of, because I saw it came from Pennsylvania, is I was like, oh my God, I sent the screenplay to Tom and maybe he took it to a convention and was showing somebody or something. And I got all excited, you know. And nothing ever came of it. That's the end of it. I go to the theater to see Dawn of the Dead from 2004. And there are several scenes littered throughout that movie. One specific scene where I'm sitting there watching it. And I was like, this is my fucking script. Now, I mean, I have no idea. I wasn't trying to sue anybody. I wasn't mad. You know what I mean? And maybe I'm just reaching too far into it. But I was just, I wonder if something I wrote influenced something that made it to the big screen. Because there was one scene in particular where it was like, that's almost page for page what I wrote. And I'd never seen or heard anything like it before.
You influenced Tom Savini.
I think I inadvertently influenced the remake of Dawn of the Dead.
Well, I like it.
And then the filmmakers from around, you know, you get different kind of eras of filmmakers and actors, you know. The filmmakers and the actors around that era were all the same people I was encountering when I was out in L.A. trying to sell that screenplay. You gotta wonder.
Clint made a movie, kind of.
Sort of. I try to be humble because I'm like, I wrote this thing. It's so great. And someone saw it and thought it was cool and made it into a movie. But I tell you, the one scene in particular is fucking word for word, page for page.
Let's see what else in March. March 24th, 976 Evil in 1989.
I just watched that the other night. Just randomly. I'm like,
I've never seen that one.
You've never seen 976 Evil? Oh, it's a great film. Stephen Jeffries. That's a great movie.
And then in 1982, you get Eating Raoul. I don't know why my notes are backwards in this one, which I just watched Chopping Mall. So that goes back to Eating Raoul. And then 2014, March 27th, It Follows. Have you seen It Follows? It's got a sequel coming out.
No, Jason talked about it quite a bit. I think you'd seen it. I have not seen it.
And then also March 27th, 1963, Quentin Tarantino was born. A lot of tie-ins to past episodes here. Oh, Quentin. When's he going to do something good again? Not too long ago, he did that one about Hollywood and had Brad Pitt.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. That wasn't bad. I enjoyed it. I swear, and I could be making this up too, that he said he's got one more film he's going to make and then he's done. Maybe I'll write a screenplay and send it to him.
Yeah, and then he could be like, now I have two films. Hell, you've seen some of his movies. They're so damn long. It feels like you're watching two movies.
He'll get my script and read it and then write me back and go, the fuck is this? The fuck is going on?
What's going on? What's going on?
So I don't think I have anything going on. Not until April. First week in April, we're heading to Kansas City. So, I mean, I could talk about that, you know, on the next episode, or I can talk about it now. We're heading to Kansas City for family vacation, and I'm going to hang out with Joe, Bob, and Darcy in Kansas City and watch Night of the Comet, the 40th anniversary of the Night of the Comet.
Yeah, I saw you got tickets to that.
Just one ticket. No one wants to go with me.
If Ivan Roth is there, you're going to have to go over and say hi to him for us.
What does he say? God, I forgot what he says.
I'm not crazy. I just don't give a fuck. I love Ivan. He was such a hell of a nice guy.
If Kelly's there, I can get a picture with her.
Right. Yeah. Wear the shirt. Wear the rebel shirt.
I think I'm going to wear that to the showing.
So for you listening, if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to our Night of the Comet and the after Night of the Comet fun fact episode.
God, I can't even remember where that showing's at. The Armor Theater? That sound right?
I don't remember.
It's for a Panic Fest. You ever heard of Panic Fest?
I have heard of Panic Fest. Haven't been, but I know it.
Big film festival. Lots of stuff premieres there. Lots of big time sponsors, you know, Shudder and Screambox and Fangoria. And I don't know, you know, all their sponsors. Seems like it'll be a good time. I'm trying to look where it's at. Of course, I type in Kansas City theaters and it brings up like the fancy theaters where you would watch plays.
I love how you said plays.
It's at the Screenland Armor Theater.
They don't watch plays there. They don't watch the theater there.
No, they might.
They're like, what are you doing here, sir? We only show theater shows. And you're like, I'm just here to fucking watch Night of the Comet and Green Slime. Where's the fucking popcorn?
They have popcorn when you go to plays like that in the big city, I wonder.
Not based off my experiences, no.
Damn it. What do you eat then while you watch it? You don't eat.
Nothing. Oh, you don't eat. It's very rude.
I don't want to go there.
You uncultured swine, you. Well, I can tell you what I've got going on, and it has nothing to do with Brian and culture, because I'm not taking him in public. Good Lord. I'm right there with you, Brian. I don't have anything specific to report. I could kind of repeat some general stuff, but nothing real big to report right now. Things are moving along here and moving along there. That's about it. Weather's starting to break, so things are shifting into higher gears, and we're just chugging along with everything.
Working on the thing in Burlington. Working on a thing at the Orpheum for later in the year. Signed up for a... my first kind of show convention. There's a spring scenic drive in the area, which, you know, like vendors who have a myriad of crafts and food and toys and sports cards. And our friend owns a little place in Mequon, a little town here in Illinois. And it's $20 for a 10x10 spot for the weekend. So I'm going to go and set up, I like a spooky table, and maybe give away some pens and talk about some scary movies and sell some stuff. But for $20 for a whole weekend, I couldn't pass it up. And I have plenty of movies and stuff to sell. But that's not until beginning of May. But it's starting. You know, it's like you're getting in the works for what's happening this year.
I can tell you what I did last night.
Watch Green Slime?
I did. Actually, I did watch Green Slime last night. But then I went and I painted an indoor fire pit. I can tell you what I'm going to do today when we're done recording.
Paint the other part of the fire pit?
I'm going to go. No. Well, I'll probably touch up the paint of the fire pit. It needs another coat. I'm going to go work on some countertops, refinishing some countertops. I can tell you what I'm going to do tomorrow. I'm going to paint some more.
I'm going to work tomorrow.
I guess I got to do that too, don't I? Fuck.
Gets in the way.
It does. Stupid day life. Adulting.
You know, other than aliens coming to Earth and ending humanity, the scariest thing in life is going to work Monday through Friday.
Yeah, working for the man sucks. I have like dedicated my life to not being a normal 9-to-5-er. It's kind of fun because no one can ever figure out. Some people think I sell drugs. They're like, how do you do what you do? What do you? I'm like, you'll never understand. And I don't have time to explain it because I got shit to do.
You're like the creatures, me, all day.
Yeah, exactly. Like I'm all amped up on coffee and shit. People are trying to talk to me like, I got no time. I need more energy. Oh, man. Nope. I just look at them and I say, until next time.
What's wrong with you, man? Show some fucking respect for the dead, will ya?